Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Wednesday, we'll talk about the best organic gardening methods on How Homeopathy Helps to Grow Great Gardens, a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Bruck and international expert agrohomeopath Kavi Raj. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts and questions. Let's go!
Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, and hopefully Kavi Raj, the author of the international bestseller Homeopathy for Farm and Garden, will be able to call in and speak with us today. And in addition, Dr. Robert Bruck, the North Carolina State University Professor of Environmental Science and Technology and a plant pathologist, may also be able to call in and speak with us today, April 13th, 2011. You're listening to show number 24 of How Homeopathy Helps Grow Great Gardens. I want to thank everyone who does listen in or get in on the live chat. There are many ways to participate in Blog Talk Radio, and I want to thank everyone. Our world is changing before our eyes. This is not the image of the frog being dropped into the pot of cold water and slowly turning up the heat so that he boils to his death, not realizing the changes in the environmental temperature. No, this is where we're living in a time when we're throwing the water into the pan of bubbling oil, and then you see the steam and the spattering mixture spewing out and burning the skin, and the entire experience that you have of fear and all of the things that surround this combination of elements, these two things, oil and water, that do not mix. And we have to figure out what in our world we can do as individuals and as a part of a community, part of a group, whether you are going to click on the Go petition that Heidi Stevenson has created regarding saving the ability for people to get herbs and to practice alternative medicine, or something else that has to do with it, the energy in the world. The name of this show is How Homeopathy Helps Grow Great Gardens. However, because the earth is our garden, and it should be a Garden of Eden, we must do all that we can to protect, preserve, repair, and renew it. That is why we talk about all kinds of related subjects on this show, not just specifically organic gardening, which we have gone into in depth in many shows, whether it is how to grow organic fruits and vegetables, companion planting, dynamic gardening, and even a story about growing homeopathic organic grapevines and wine, producing wine. So we have many, many varied topics on this show. We continue with a special programming today about the Japanese nuclear crisis and the homeopathic approach to sickness. We're going to ask you to go to the live chat to post your questions, and I'm going to see if we have any callers on the show. So far, there are none, and that means that something has happened with our co-host. Most likely, he has an emergency case or something's going on with his electrical connections. So we do depend on Kavi Raj very often for providing some substantial information about how we are living in harmony with our earth and how we can continue to do that. I want to thank everyone who does join us Don't forget that you can friend and favorite the show. You can put the widget player onto your website so that you can share these great shows with friends and visitors. You can click on the Twitter and the Facebook button to spread your news. There's many, many ways to do that. We are going to begin now with a prayer for healing the earth. And this can be done every day at any time that you bring this thought into your mind. We know that on Friday, 11th March 2011, Japan was hit by a magnitude 9 earthquake, followed by a gigantic tsunami. The official toll by April 6th was 12,468 who had died. And we are a week later, so I'm sure they're still counting. And more than 15,000 people are missing. Hundreds of thousands lost their homes. Millions are still either without electricity or affected by shortages of electricity and communications. And most worrying of all is that there is a nuclear disaster when we do not see an end in sight. The earthquake and the tsunami were unstoppable. But was the nuclear disaster waiting to happen, or could it have been avoided? Our prayer begins with taking a breath of life in, taking a big breath of oxygen in through your nostrils, and then a sigh outward with the lungs and the mouth, releasing any hurt or pain, suffering or loss. So do that again, in, bringing in fresh oxygen, and exhaling out any pain, suffering, loss, whether it is loss of a friend, of a communication, of a place, of a time, whatever it is. And let us be able to absorb the information that we receive with intelligence, wisdom, and discernment for future decisions. We shall discuss openly our concerns and feelings around these issues that concern the earth. I'm going to check in with Kaviraj and see what where he is right now. So it seems that it's possible that he will not be able to be with us, but he might be able to send messages via the chat. Which, of course, this is a loss of communication. This is a subtle message, a way that it feels not to be able to be in touch with someone else when our communications lines break down. And therefore, we want to try and keep this energy open as much as possible. We have a lot of information to talk about. We're hearing messages now that the Europeans are being warned to avoid drinking milk or eating vegetables due to the high radiation levels. The Fukushima Daiichi reactors use the uranium-235 fission to generate electricity for the TEPCO. Reactor number 3 runs on mixed oxide, that's MOX fuel, in which uranium is mixed with other fissile materials such as plutonium from spent reactor fuel or from decommissioned nuclear weapons. I myself have many, many questions to propose. I don't know that I have so many answers, but I have a lot of questions. And maybe if anyone is listening, you would be able to call in and... Okay, we have some callers, so let's see who is here. I'm opening the phone line. Can I ask who is calling in today? Hello? Is there anyone on the line? Sounds like there's no sound. Okay, maybe the sound is not working. Okay, let's continue on with the thoughts. We are looking at a number of dilemmas. The information that is fed to us changes every day. my question, and I'm just proposing all of these questions out there, and I hope that some people will comment on the live chat that we have on the Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio Show and see what people are thinking. Is it safe? Is it not safe regarding the water and the radiation in the air? We ask ourselves concerning the radiation in the air, the earth, and the water, because it's not localized. It spreads and it is dispersed into the high-level currents of the air. And so even if you are not living in the regional vicinity of Japan, you're going to be feeling the effects. Do the government officials, do the people in charge, have the Fukushima nuclear plants under control? The question is, will they ever? They continue to try and attempt to cool down the core with water. And that is the reason why you're hearing so many stories in radio shows about the radiation, about water, about the water itself, the ocean water, still containing radioactive contamination. What are the short and long-term implications of all of this? Our questions regarding our Earth, our global community, is how does the fallout affect the rainwater, the plants and vegetables that are grown outdoors and even indoors? What about the meat and poultry products, the dairy and milk and cheese products that are produced from the cows and the sheep? What about the oceans and the sea life? And let's see, what can a farmer feed his goats, his chickens, his cows, and his sheep? And I just want to make note that Kavi is unable to use his phone today. So this is why he has been unable to get on to the show. How do we measure the levels of radiation? And will we be changing the acceptable limits? You know that I think that the governments have already changed the acceptable amounts of radiation that we have in our lives. They are constantly making these adjustments, not just with radiation, but all sorts of other clinical testing values that we have when we go to the physician and they check our blood pressure or how much cholesterol we have or the other kinds of testing, and we get these statistics and these numbers. They change them depending on how, I guess, they want us to perceive these measurements, whether they want us to take more drugs, so they raise the level of acceptability for our cholesterol, or they lower something and say, you're going to need to take more of one thing or another because they want us to purchase more. And regarding the radiation, they want us to be assuaged and feel like that it's not as bad as it looks, but we don't know. Victor is here with us on the chat, and for him to call in, I'm not sure whether he is able to do that. I think that it is a landline. Okay, and it looks like Kavi has just gotten on. I'm going to check that out. I don't know. Technical problems are just part of doing a radio show. So I'm going to open the line one time and see who is calling in. Let's see. There is someone who is calling in right now. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, wonderful. And then there's another person calling in, but they did not announce themselves. So I'm just proposing now, Kavi. I'm so happy you were able to get in on the line. I'm just proposing now all of these questions, concerns, doubts that we have. I don't know whether you were able to hear me.
And I heard some of it.
Okay,
not
so
all.
I will review it again.
You were talking about what are we going to feed ourselves with? In Europe, the radiation levels are 300 times above normal, and they have announced that people should not drink milk and not buy certain vegetables, especially the green leafy vegetables, because they are the most affected.
Right.
Now, in Holland, for instance, they grow a lot in greenhouses, so that is less affected because, you know, they have a lot of greenhouse vegetables.
Right. Okay. I see that Dr. Bob from North Carolina State University has also been able to call in. The sound is a little bit fuzzy today, but we will make do with what we have for our connection.
From NC State University.
Hi. I'm asking everybody to put their thoughts and intention on fine-tuning the radio waves so that we get a clear connection here. So Mike Adams of Natural News has suggested that people purchase canned products that are organic that have been prepared before the radiation. And most people that I think of have not stored away supplies of non-radiated safe foods. Mike, he also suggests that people store safe seeds that they can sprout indoors. And my question is, what water will we be able to use to grow them that is safe? And my son, who is not on the show, but he says, Mom, how long can you have a store of food that is protected? Eventually, you're going to have to come out into the radioactive environment and deal with what is going on around the globe. So any thoughts about that?
Well, I would say that the remedies that are fit for humans should also be fit for plants because, you know, that is in general already the case. So I would say that you could use plutonium nitricum also on the plants. You could also use iodine on the plants to absorb the radiation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, so but how much of the area can we use? Only in our specific garden? What do we do? Will it actually take care of the food that we grow ourselves? But what about purchasing food?
That's going to be, of course, a lot more difficult. As I said, the stuff that is grown in greenhouses, radiation also goes through glass, of course. They say stay out of the rain because the rain is radioactive as well. Yeah, so the plants grown in greenhouses at least stay free of that rain. Yeah,
okay.
But the radiation goes through glass also. So how safe are you in your own house? You could ask that question too. Yeah.
Okay.
But I say if you take sufficient iodine to protect at least your thyroid and therefore your metabolism, and you treat your plants with that, you can put iodine in the water that you take from your tap and wash your vegetables in it so the radioactivity binds to the iodine. And don't rub your plants, just wash it, yeah? Because when you rub it, you rub the stuff in and you rub it into your skin as well.
What do you mean, rub your plants? What
well,
do you
mean? Don't brush your potatoes, for instance, because then you brush the radioactivity in the potato.
Just rinse it, that's all.
Rinse it with water in which you have added iodine to bind the radioactive material.
Are you talking about the little tincture bottles of iodine?
Yeah, I'm talking about the little tincture bottles.
Yeah.
Mike Adams, he has on his website, he has a couple of links to places where you can still get it. Yeah, and that's in liquid, so you add some to the water. And then it will bind to the iodine instead of staying with your vegetables. And, of course, that water, you will have to throw it away. But wherever you throw it away, it is already contaminated.
Where do you throw it? Where do we throw contaminated water?
It goes down the drain, as usual, you know. But even if it goes down the drain, where it goes, it is already contaminated. So if it ends
right.
up in floods and in rivers, you know, there it is already contaminated because it's in the air and comes down with the rain.
Well, my question is, how many drops do we put in how much water?
Now, I would say that if you put 20 drops to a liter, that should be sufficient because radiation is a very subtle energy, as we know, yeah. And you don't need much, you know. Just like when we take the iodine, yeah. Then we don't drink it by the liter. We drink it by the so many drops, and the radioactivity will bind to that.
Okay. There are many ways of taking this iodine. I know that, Rob, when you go traveling to the Amazon and you want to purify water, do you use iodine to do that?
Yes, very often iodine is used, iodine drops. If we are in any question of the water that we are drinking, we would put 5 drops in a liter of water and let it sit for an hour, but that is for microbiological decontamination.
Uh-huh. Okay, so that's a different mm-hmm. kind of contamination.
Right, it's a different
yes.
kind, but it does work.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what else do we know about this utilization of iodine in terms of homeopathically? Because I've heard concern about taking the iodine tablets, which are given out around the neighborhoods where people live around nuclear power plants. We also have that. And I've heard that it could cause problems in the body. So what do you think about that?
I think that is dependent on the dose. If you take too much of anything, yeah, then it becomes, of course, poisonous. Yeah, Paracelsus already said that 500 years ago. Whether something is a medicine or a poison depends on the dose. And so you take the smallest amount possible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. And
what kind of iodine, what form of iodine do they give it in? Do they give it in material doses or do they give it in tissue salts? Yeah, there are differences there also. In tissue salts or in potassium iodide homeopathically in a 6C, you get, of course, a lot less in, and so it is less likely to cause any damage.
Do you feel like this is going to have to be a regular regimen for people to stay healthy, that everybody
yeah.
is going to end up taking this?
Yeah, I think so, because, you know, the radiation is not going to be finished overnight. You know, they have to, they're now trying to pack in these nuclear power plants with sand and cement like they did with Chernobyl. Yeah. And we had, from Chernobyl, we had 3-4 months that the radiation was quite intense, and then it started wearing off. Yeah, so now we have 6 nuclear plants that are all more or less damaged, although 3 of them were shut down at the moment of the accident. But they don't tell us anything about them, yeah. And I bet you, if the cooling pond in which they were keeping the spent radioactive fuel was damaged in 3 or 4 of them, then it will be damaged in the others also. But they don't tell you about that.
Yeah, I agree with
right.
Kavi. What he's saying that you know, this accident, quote unquote, that began as something benign, then they were
yeah.
calling it a 3. Accident, then a 5, now it's a 7. We're
right.
not getting
it's
the truth about it, and
we can
assume that this is going to be going on for a long time. And of course, the iodine is only one of the problems, because iodine 131 has a half life of only 8 days.
Yeah.
The thing that's of more concern is cesium 137, which
exactly.
has a half life of 10,000 years. Therefore, if that starts getting into our atmosphere and spreading around the Earth, again, as Kavi says, we are going to be exposed to low levels of this radiation in practically everywhere we go and everything we do. So I think your son, Debbie, is correct
yes.
in saying that you can't avoid it.
Right.
The question you're asking is, how can you protect yourself from it?
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes, and then with the cesium, Maybe Dr. Bob can answer that. I would say you take the cesium also in a homeopathic form, but not the radioactive form, of course, and see if any of that radioactive cesium would bind to it. But I don't know whether it does. Yeah.
This is a good question. I don't know the answer to that.
Kaviraj, here is a homeopathic question. We know that obstacles to cure can prevent a person from truly healing completely.
Yes.
And so, therefore, whether somebody is eating in a home that has leaded paint or is drinking out of leaded glasses, they're going to usually have symptoms from lead toxicity. Now, if we have something like cesium, well, first of all, let me go back a little bit. The iodine issue was one that occurs immediately after, within the seven to 10 days of.
Yes, but the radiation is ongoing. So in 7 or 10 days, it's not going to be finished. It's going to take months before they have stopped the radiation escaping from the nuclear power plants.
It only lasts for a short period of time, but that's assuming that it stopped, and it has not stopped yet.
Right. So this is my question about obstacle to cure and why I asked whether we're going to have to be taking these homeopathic remedies on an ongoing basis and if they will still be effective, or whether a one-time dose is going to carry a person through the rest of their life.
No, a one-time dose is not going to do that because you have a constant exposure. It is a bit like when Hahnemann went to see the copper workers, they had copper poisoning, or when he went to the mirror makers, they had poisoning from the substances they used there, And then he would give them the remedy, but he would also tell them, either you change your job or you have to take this for as long as you work in there. So now we are exposed to it in the air. We can't see it. We Geiger counters are one thing, but not all Geiger counters are good enough to measure the radiation, and some of them only measure a certain kind of radiation. Yeah, so you have really no way of knowing for how long it is going on. Yeah, until they can guarantee us that the power plants have all been packed in, and this
right,
is six times as big as Chernobyl.
Another analogy you could use, Debbie, is the fact that you're aware that a iodine deficiency will cause a goiter in the thyroid.
Yes,
very very common in Asia. And to answer your question, that's why you must continually have a dose of iodine to prevent that disease, because it's metabolized in the liver and the kidneys and excreted. And that's why we have iodized salt. That's why the Himalayan salts are suggested, because they have a natural background of iodine in it from the ocean bottoms that they originally came from. But iodine has to be constantly replaced in the diet, otherwise you end up with a deficiency.
Yes, okay. Absolutely.
Therefore, we're going to see some populations around the world, different cultures being affected and in the long term, depending on what knowledge the governments provide and what resources the governments provide for their populations. And this is really important. I think if homeopathy is going to be accepted and can perhaps we'll be able to show its effectiveness through these life situations that we're all going to be dealing with. I think we need to get together on that and start to tabulate and document the work that we do.
Yes, I agree with that. But then, there is, of course, a bit of a problem. How do you get everybody on the same page? That is the first thing, And how much iodine is available everywhere, because when Mike Adams, a couple of weeks back, he already said most shops have run out of supplies, And he had only three websites where there still was something available. Now we are 3 weeks further. It remains doubtful if these people can keep supplying over such a long period. Yeah.
So that's why we need as many resources as possible, and maybe
yes.
we can go over some of the places that and things that we can do to assist our body, supplement our body to protect the thyroid, but also the rest of the body, because I'm not really completely sure what steps we can take in terms of all the different types of radiation that is going to be out in our environment. And one friend actually said that because evolution is speeding up so quickly that we as humans will be evolving. We're in this fishbowl. The fishbowl is going to have all of these radioactive elements. How will we
yeah.
change? Will we mutate in a positive way to be able to cope and deal and with all of this, or will we have deformities and deaths and sickness? It's going to depend on how the human being can transmute all of this information.
The thing known about mutations is that they're always going in the wrong direction, and that the result is not viable. Yeah. So I wonder what makes people think that we can, have this evolution in a positive way when we are surrounded by so much negative energy. I have my doubts whether we will be able to cope with that on such a short period. Yeah, because we really have only a short period that we can adapt. Yeah, and most people say after world population is below 21. Yeah, so they may have a chance of adaptation. Yeah, but everybody over 21, yeah, is the other half of the population, and of that, at least a third is over 50. Well, they will not live long enough to evolve in a positive way. Yeah, so you will see as a result. I think you will see a lot of increases in cancer and death, and it will
yes.
go pretty rapidly because of the constant exposure.
Well, in one way, we can look to Chernobyl as a historical view into the past of how many years it was since that incident and what has happened to the population. And what...
Well, the population
yes.
nearby can't even go there, and they say, that's what I've been investigating also a bit, yeah, that if you spend now a full day near Chernobyl, your chances of developing a cancer in the next 6 months are pretty high. Yeah,
yep.
So
yeah.
Chernobyl is still a no-go area, although everything has been packed in. So why is it a no-go area? Because packing it in concrete is not going to be a real solution. Yeah.
Well, the soil is so contaminated that for 1,000 years it's going to be dangerous to be around there.
Yeah, exactly. You know, walking around there is sufficient to give you a cancer in 6 months' time. Thank you very
yep.
much. And
right.
with Fukushima, there are 6 reactors. It's not just
yep.
one. And
right.
Chernobyl was a uranium reactor, and in Fukushima, it's a MOX reactor, which runs on a mix of uranium and plutonium fuels, and plutonium is the most toxic substance known to man.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, my other concern is that Chernobyl mostly was land-based, and
yeah.
Here
and
we have the dispersion of the radioactive elements into
the ocean
life, which you know, it's waves going out and out and out all
yes.
the way across. So we have infiltrated and contaminated our ocean and sea life. Now, what's going to happen about eating any fish anymore?
Well,
or
the,
kelp,
the younger,
which is supposed to be...
The younger fish is going to be eaten by the older fish, and it's going to bioaccumulate in the older fish.
Yes.
And particularly things like cesium that lasts for thousands of years. The older the fish gets, the more it's going to bioaccumulate, and ultimately, if we eat that fish, we are going to be exposed to the higher levels. There's no way of getting
yes,
around
exactly.
it.
Yes, exactly. That's the same with the mercury.
That's the cycle of life.
Yeah.
And we're so concerned about getting our omega-3s as a very important part of our diet, and we're going to have to find a way that we can keep humans alive in a healthy manner and still provide what's necessary to our diets. And when we think about it, you know, the kelp, and I keep going back to the kelp as so important for the thyroid health, and that it contains iodine, and that in that region of the world, it's a very popular part of the diet. So what's going to happen?
Well, it could become contaminated.
Yeah, this is my concern, the accumulation of more radiation into the kelp. Is it going to be good for us to be using that as a healing nutritional supplement to our diet, to use kelp?
Well, let me inject some data into this, which is interesting and actually a little bit disconcerting. I'm reading right now from the Institute of Medicine of the National Academy of Sciences in the United States, a report issued in the year 2000. First of all, it gives you the recommended daily allowance, minimum daily allowance, for iodine in the diet in order to protect simply against thyroid problems. In other words, this is the minimum amount to avoid disease. We're not talking about radiation now.
Of iodine?
Of iodine, okay? And we're going to write these numbers down. They're very simple, okay? For adult men and women over 18 years old, it's 150 micrograms per day. For pregnant women, it's 260 micrograms per day. So we're talking about 150, and for pregnant women, 260. Now, it lists the six most potent iodine foods in the world as per serving, and they actually tell you what a serving is. And the only one that is worth even talking about here is the one you mentioned, Debbie.
Yeah.
Okay. Sea kelp. Okay.
Yes.
One serving of a quarter of a cup. One quarter of a cup of sea kelp will give 415 micrograms. The rest of it, I'm going to read it quickly because these are common foods, and these are listed as the best. Okay. That's an entire container of low-fat yogurt, okay, 87 micrograms, okay, an entire cup of 2% cow's milk, 48 micrograms, a whole egg boiled, 21 micrograms, an entire cup of strawberries, 12 micrograms, and 1 ounce of mozzarella cheese, 10 micrograms. So to make a long story short, if every day, every person had a cup of yogurt, a cup of milk, an egg, a cup of strawberries, and a chunk of cheese, it would add up to only half the daily allowance of iodine to protect against disease. That's kind of interesting. Meaning how many of us that are not taking some sort of a supplement, or, as you just said, eating a serving of sea kelp every day, are getting enough to protect us, particularly with the radioactive iodine-131 now going around the world in the environment. Those numbers are pretty interesting.
Right. So this means that we need the sea kelp, but we're going to be able to we're going to need to harvest it now. Or is it too late?
Well, if you're going to harvest it now, in many ways, it all depends on where in the world you're talking about. Off the coast of Brazil, maybe it's okay. But Pacific, remember, they're dumping this stuff into the Pacific Ocean, and the most lucrative commercial sea kelp belts in the world are all the way from Thailand, around the Indian Ocean, and up to China. That's where most of it comes from, and now we're raising the point that they're putting millions of gallons of radioactive water into the ocean. Obviously, it's going to be absorbed by the kelp, so I'm not sure if it's safe.
Especially not if it's from near Japan. You know, and they have always had a great kelp diet because sushi is wrapped in it, and
grow it in farms in the water, in the ocean.
They grow them in farms?
They have kelp farms, that's correct.
Okay.
And those kelp farms are now either miles or kilometers away from where they're dumping this stuff in the ocean.
I have a question regarding the ability of the ocean or even our earth to filter. So, you know, you think about charcoal as being a filter for contaminants in water and maybe other contaminants in land. And is it possible that there are areas in the world, maybe places on in the ocean, where when the waters travel and pass through these areas, that the water could be cleaned and we could find a little oasis of clean water?
Let me answer that.
I'm just using my imagination.
Okay. When it comes to many things, the answer is yes. Let's talk about an oil spill, okay? Oil is an organic compound. It's a hydrocarbon. Hydrocarbons are used as part of the biological trophic levels of all organisms, including those in the ocean. The fact is that, yes, if you have an oil spill, it's going to do immediate damage. But if you give that oil spill 100 years or 200 years, it is going to be metabolized into the organisms in the ocean and, for the most part, be rendered benign. There's a big difference between that and radiation. Radiation is not used by anything, okay? Radiation, ionizing radiation, there's only one word for it, and that's bad. It is accumulated in organisms, from microorganisms to whales, but it is not metabolized or used. It works by the half-life, as we just said. For iodine, the half-life is 8 days. For cesium, it's 10,000 years. For plutonium, it's 20 million years.
I don't think we're going to live that long.
Once this gets into the environment, it is there. It is not going to go away or be filtered.
No, not at all.
You're not painting a very good picture here.
No, we have to be realistic. We have to, you know, we are not the government. The government is always playing things down. Yeah, but here we can't play it down. We have to be realistic. We have to say to the people, okay, this is what we are facing. Yeah, this is a fact. There is no way around it. Yeah, the government has consistently been saying, oh, it's not dangerous for you. It's not dangerous for you. It's not dangerous for you. What did the EPA do? It augmented the allowable amount of radiation by 200 times. Yeah,
right.
So they can keep saying it's not dangerous for you.
Here's the best one. I read this in the newspaper this morning. It's really funny. You're all aware of these body scanners now at the airports that we have in the United States.
Yeah, I was going to bring that into the conversation.
And the body scanners are, of course, ionized radiation. It's basically a low-level X-ray. Okay. Now, everybody, including the government, says it's okay. It can't hurt you. Okay. There's nothing wrong with it. So what they did was a survey of people from different professions, of the ones that travel a lot, who turned down the body scan. They would say, go ahead, frisk me. I will not go in the scanner. What is the group of individuals with the highest rejection of body scanners?
Radiologists. Oh, my
radiologists, goodness. The ones who are exposing people to radiation all day long, have the highest turn down rate. They will not go in the body scanner. So does that say something? The people who actually know what this stuff does are the ones who reject it the most. So Kavi's absolutely right. You know, it's sad to say it, and it sounds very cynical, but when it comes to official edicts coming out of the government, I would say that probably 99% of the time you don't want to believe it.
Yeah.
Right, and also oncologists were also...
were they high, too? Yeah.
Yeah, they were high, too.
Well, I wonder why.
Well, they...
No, I don't.
...were of cancer.
Yeah, exactly. They know what it's going to do.
Right.
Yeah, of course.
Right, so...
You know, radiologists, in the beginning of when they used the X-ray, the radiologists that were in the same room and doing the X-rays for the people... They all got bone cancer of the ankles and the feet. Why? Because that's the only place where they're not being protected. Because there's a door that protects the body, but it doesn't protect the lower leg and the ankles and the feet. And that's where they all get cancer.
Very interesting. So we're getting radiation, and I have written a number of blogs regarding the CT scans, the
yes.
medical imaging, the
very bad
mammograms. We
yeah.
have it. We have it all in our, you know, just generally our medical system, how we are using this technology, and whether it is being overused, and this is a major question.
That's the front page of the New York Times this morning. The Brooklyn Hospital of the State University of New York basically are admitting that they were giving CT scans to children that were 10 times the amount of radiation that they were supposed to be giving it to them. Particularly in a children's body where stem cells are differentiating and causing the body to grow, that's the most dangerous time of their lives. And people are now questioning. I mean, particularly with MRI being available, which has no radiation at all, but is far more expensive to use than is a CAT scan. Okay, are they taking people and giving them CAT scans instead of giving them an MRI, which is just as useful, simply to save money? It's a good question, because basically a CAT scan is a dangerous thing.
Right, and I really don't know the effect of the MRIs either. But
the MRI is magnetism. It is not radiation. It's two completely different things. I can't tell you it's harmless, but it is not radiation.
In a CAT scan, you get as much radiation as you would get from 600 X-rays. So that means that for the next 60 years, you get 10 X-rays every year.
Okay. So Dr. Oz had a show about this, about the cumulative effect of X-rays, of specifically dental X-rays, on women and how it affects their thyroid gland over time. And this is a warning out to all those folks who go and get their either annual or biannual dental checkups and get your X-rays, your mouth X-rays. One big thing is they used to provide it, and not very many do. It's the lead shield. It must have the throat cover, and ask for it if you're a woman specifically. I would say anyone. Ask for it if you're going to get your dental X-ray, and cover up your thyroid, your throat area. That's a big issue today. And the CT, you were mentioning the exposure to the CT scans. And this is also, it says 330,000 of these scans were given in 1995, and the change in 2008 was 1.65 million of these scans were given. So the increasing amount of X-rays to people will increase the numbers of cancers, and we're seeing that. So this is an issue. Now, the question that we have, and we have in the chat, Victor has provided for the folks there an interesting detail about a Japanese engineer who created some type of paint, and he was telling me about this a couple of months ago, and maybe he can expound on that a little bit. It's a paint that will absorb fumes, and we'll give you that link. It's www.theargus.co.uk news, and just look up town paint will absorb fumes. Okay, so what we need to know, the information that we really need to know, is how to protect ourselves, how to protect our homes and our gardens and our water. What can we do? Do you have any kind of answers for us?
Well, what answers can we give? You know, the thing is that you have to keep protecting yourself as much as you can, but your prospects are actually very limited, because it's an ongoing thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to be able to at least take the iodine, but afterwards you get the cesium and then you get the plutonium. Well, the only thing with the plutonium that I can think of is plutonium nitricum. Yeah, plutonium nitricum is the best antidote against the radiation, but that is when it is plutonium radiation. And first we get the cesium, because that's the stuff that first escapes. And with the cesium, well, radium bromate may do it, cadmium sulf may do it, uranium nitricum may do it, but we do not know this yet. Yeah, because
right.
we do not know what kind of disease comes out of radioactive cesium. Yeah, because it's never been proved. So we don't know. Yeah, so we are more or less groping in the dark here, and we have to find out by trial and error.
Right. So we are in the living experiment, and we're going to have to see. And we want to let people know that homeopathy is based upon energetic medicines and specifically selecting a remedy that matches the patient's symptoms and the totality of symptoms. Therefore, we do not give remedies haphazardly or just to cover a named disease or a situation. So does this mean, Kavi, that we need to wait until we actually see an outcome of over time?
Of the symptoms, yeah, I would say so.
Right. So we don't know. Does anybody know how long it was before, during the episode in Chernobyl, we were able to see the radiation sickness? Or I know many of the births there, a high, like 6,000 of the births were showing the thyroid cancer in the children. So
yeah, I mean, you're talking about thousands dying immediately, which is a very different situation from what we have here in Fukushima.
Right.
On the other hand, if you read about Chernobyl, people are still today, over 30 years later, okay, having highly accelerated rates of leukemia, lymphoma, thyroid cancers, pancreatic cancers, that live within a 100-mile radius of the area. So again, when you're dealing with these long-lasting radioactive ions like cesium, which was spewed all over the Chernobyl area, these people basically are living in a danger zone for the rest of their lives, and everyone is going to genetically react in a different way to the exposure. It's not as if there's one way that people are going to die from it.
So do you feel like the 100-mile radius around the Fukushima nuclear plant should totally be, people should move out of that area? Like what range?
Well, here you're back into, again, the politics, because remember, Japan isn't the Ukraine. Japan is the most highly populated island in the world, okay? You're talking about millions of people crammed into a little space. I will tell you that politically, there is no way in hell that they are going to put a 100-mile containment area around those reactors, simply because economically they can't afford to do so. What is the correct area? It all depends
I'm talking
how safe
like
you want to be.
We can't possibly relocate all of those people. That's
well,
what I'm
well,
saying.
They will have
it would
to.
Cost trillions of dollars.
But
they
can't. They really can't continue to live there. It's a dead zone.
No,
exactly.
they can
so
have,
they
them
have
live
to
there
relocate.
By lying to them and telling them it's safe.
I don't
yeah,
think
exactly.
I'm hearing that message anymore. I don't feel as if I'm hearing the message that it's safe. I'm hearing the message that the milk is contaminated, the spinach and the other green leafy vegetables are contaminated, the ground is contaminated, and the water. So I do not. I myself am not hearing the message that it is safe to live there. And in that case, I'm wondering what kind of prompt action governments can take to In harmony, nations with cooperative effort can take to relocate families. And that's what I would say needs to be done. That's my own personal opinion.
Well, you know, people in a 20-mile radius have already been moved. They have extended it, as far as I know, to 120 miles, and that is already getting close to the suburbs of Tokyo.
Tokyo
is a very big city with, 10, 15 million people. If they have to relocate that, that is going to cost them so much money they won't be able to do it, and so they will play it down.
Well,
yeah.
I'm gonna...
Okay, so so now we have the potential healing homeopathic remedies, but that's really something we're talking about for the future. Hold on a second. Let me put this on mute for a moment. Okay. Okay. So we're looking at something that can be used in the future, but we need to know what people can do in the immediacy of today. For instance, we mentioned soaking in baking soda just to kind of keep cleansing the body, or Epsom salts or things like that. Are there any other steps that can be taken?
Well, rinsing is always better than soaking, because when you soak, then you soak in that radioactive stuff. You first must rinse everything off with the shower. Don't rub anything. Don't use a cloth to wash it off, you know, because the more you rub it, the more it goes inside. So you have to really rinse yourself off, and once you are rinsed off, then you can soak, but not before.
I see. That's important to know.
Yes, because otherwise you soak in a radioactive bath. That is not very clever. Yeah, so we must avoid that like the plague. Yeah?
Well, the question is the water safe that you're using
to
shower?
Well, the water that comes from a water processing plant is safe as long as it has not rained. But as soon as it begins to rain anywhere, and you know, these tanks are open on the top anyway, yeah, so some radiation will go in there, but once it starts raining, then the water that is coming out of your tap is no longer safe either.
Mm-hmm. And is this, what range of water are we talking about? Because even here in the East Coast of the United States, they have done measures of radioactive materials here in the, I think it was the vegetables and the water, along Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, North, South Carolina, and Georgia. We've already seen an increased level of radiation.
Yes, Mike Adams said last week already that it was 300 times higher than normal. And then the EPA immediately put up the amount of allowable radiation by 200%. Yeah. So
right,
then they can keep playing it down, because they don't want panic among the people, because if panic breaks out among the people, then there is no army and no government that is going to be able to control it. Yeah?
Yeah.
They are always playing everything down. Oh, it's no danger to you. Like, last week there was in the United States, there was 300 times the radiation in the milk. And they say, but you can still drink it. Hello.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Okay, so I'm going to.
Whereas in Europe, they have said no, don't drink the milk. Yeah, so they're gonna flush all that milk somewhere. But where are they going to put it? You know, the thing with radiation is that you have no way to put it anywhere where is a safe place.
This is a problem.
Yeah, because
with
it's
nuclear
going everywhere.
This is a major problem with nuclear power plants to begin with. That there is waste and nobody wants to put it in their backyard, and we really don't have a very safe way to store it anywhere, even though we're supposedly do. I want to give this information to you that Victor has provided about this new pollution-eating paint that will clean the air. It's a new form of paint that can absorb some of the noxious gases from vehicle exhaust that go on sale across Europe. It's going to be, this was in an article from 2004, which means it's already being manufactured. And it will provide for architects and town planners a new weapon to fight against pollution. It comes from the New Science article report. They always have the greatest things. It's an eco paint designed to absorb nitrogen oxides, one of the causes of respiratory problems and smog production. And I don't know whether it's going to be effective in terms of what we have, but let's say Dr. Robert McIntyre of Millennium Chemicals, who developed the paint, says that a typical 0.3 millimeter layer, that's a very thin layer, would be enough to last for 5 years in a heavily polluted city. The secret lies in spherical nanoparticles of titanium dioxide and calcium carbonate that are embedded into the base of the paints.
Of the paint, yes.
Yes, polysiloxane, a silicon-based polymer. The base is porous enough to allow the nitrogen oxides to diffuse through it and adhere to the titanium dioxide particles. These particles absorb ultraviolet radiation in sunlight and use this energy to convert nitrogen oxides to nitric acid. The acid is then either washed away in the rain or neutralized by the alkaline calcium carbonate particles producing carbon dioxide, water, and calcium nitrate. It's a very interesting article. I don't know how it can be effective in terms of the issue of radiation. It's also saying in 2002, 7,000 square meters of road surface were covered with catalytic cement in Milan, Italy. Residents reported that it was noticeably easier to breathe, and concentrations of nitrogen oxides at street level were cut by 60%. So we are probably going to be turning to the technological wizards of our day to find solutions to these ongoing problems. Maybe we already have the technology, we just don't know it.
Well, radiation is different from any other kind of pollution in that it can penetrate into everything. So you could say any substance is useful for that to absorb radiation. If you live in a town where there is a lot of radiation, like in Chernobyl, a piece of concrete from the Chernobyl power plant, will be full of radiation. But it will also, the radiation will also come out. How are you going to close it off? You cannot neutralize the radiation. That is the problem with radiation. And the other thing is a chemical substance. But this is not a chemical substance, so it cannot be neutralized. How are you going to neutralize this?
I don't know. Victor, who has given us this, he says that there is something in the patent description of that paint that talks about radiation. So we're going to have to investigate a little bit further. Dr. Bob has provided some information about other kinds of, and we've reviewed this in a very long radio show with Phyllis Georgic from Pennsylvania. She has provided before that kelp, ginseng, ashwagandha, recently found to regrow nerves, chlorella, zeolite, folic acid, nascent iodine, reishi mushrooms, sea salt, also salty miso, botanical plant-derived or lipovitamin C, magnesium chlorophyll, selenium, which is found in Brazil nuts, and coconut. These are all help to protect against the Fukushima radiation from Japan. And
that is the iodine radiation. And we don't know about the cesium radiation with that. Yeah, because...
Right.
The plutonium is even worse. As I said before, plutonium is the most toxic substance known to man. Yeah. So in order for that to be neutralized, you have to have something that absorbs it. Yeah, and then keeps it in. But the problem is that it cannot be kept in. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that the radiation is completely different in nature than any chemical substance. And in the past, we used to have lead paint, and now we know that lead stops radiation, so we may have to go back to lead paint to at least keep it out. But when it's going after that, it will stay in the environment anyway. You have to go out and you have to buy your food, and your food, you cannot cover all the plants with a layer of lead paint because then they won't grow. Yeah. So how are we going to go about by stopping the radiation completely penetrating everything in our food chain?
Right.
Yeah? How are we going to do that? We don't have any means yet. And technological wizards can maybe do a lot. But with radiation, we've had nuclear power for 50 years. They haven't found a solution for that. So how are they now all of a sudden going to come up with a solution then? I have my grave doubts about that.
Okay, well, I am putting out a positive intention that the upcoming generation who will be living with this in their environment, they're living and breathing it every single day, some sort of awareness and information will come into their generation to help clean up the earth and our environment. I want to always stay positive and think that there will be a solution to problems. You know, there's some kind of saying that says God doesn't give you something that you can't handle. And I would like to think that that is true, that somewhere, maybe this information is already available, but we just have not gotten in touch with it, or it hasn't been explored enough, or even, you know, everything is, change is always suppressed. And perhaps we have to put a light, a spotlight on this new type of energy or protection from the radiation or cleaning up of the radiation. We have to find that spotlight that's going to let us see those who are working in this field. That is my
intention. Yes, of course. I agree with you that we have to keep a positive attitude, you know, because otherwise everybody is going to become depressed by this kind of news. Yeah. At the same time, we must also be realistic and say, okay, so for the moment we don't have anything. So we have the homeopathic remedies to at least counteract the effects of it.
Right.
Yeah. So that is my way of positive thinking is, oh, okay, well, there is radiation and it will have negative effects, but we do have remedies that we can use to counteract it.
Mm-hmm. And it will have to be like on an ongoing basis, just like people
yes.
who live in that area and have to eat the sushi or the sea kelp every day.
Well,
and
not only over there, it's going to be over here. It is already
right.
over here, 300 times higher than we are supposed to get from natural radiation. Yeah, it is 300 times as high. Well, you know, that's like standing under an X-ray machine that gives you 300 times as much as a normal X-ray. Yeah, continuously.
Right, and the problem the problem is it's invisible. We don't know
it.
Yes,
it's invisible. You can't see it. You can't smell it. You can't touch it. Yeah. So we have to count with the fact that it is going to be there, and therefore, you know, it's almost a given that you say, okay, we shall put these remedies out there. Anybody who wants them, they can come and get a dose, and they should do that on a regular basis, because otherwise, you know, sooner or later it will hit them, yeah, and it will hit them very hard. So we have the duty to protect the population if the government is not going to do it, and the government can't, because the government sits with their hands in the air.
Mm-hmm. So we have some notes from Dr. Bob. He says that the Fukushima, the current radiation levels are equivalent to 1 year's level of healthy exposure as two radioactive elements are detected. 1 hour of exposure to the Fukushima is equivalent to 1 year's exposure to natural levels of radioactive iodine and cesium. So you're compressing this amount of exposure into a very short amount of time.
Exactly,
and
that's going to have a devastating effect.
Okay, and I see that I want to welcome Phyllis. She has tuned in to the live chat, and we've been talking about all sorts of things. She has given us some more information. She says that borage leaves and flowers will be able to give you your omega-3 fatty acids. The problem
yes.
that we've been talking about, Phyllis, is the fact that our plant life is now contaminated. So we're going, and also apple pectin is used for radiation protection after Chernobyl, so we're going to have to take some lessons from the folks who have been living with it all these years. Also, Phyllis says that kelp will aid to remove radiation from the oceans. Kelp will also feed the iodine into the fish to aid them to remove radiation from them as well. So she's thinking in a different model. Not only is the kelp for human consumption, but it is for those other living organisms. And the question is, what happens to the kelp once it removes the radiation from ocean life? Will we be able to, what will we do with this kelp? Can we harvest it anymore? it's a big problem that we're going to have to ask our contemporary geniuses to kind of solve. So let us know if you have any other topics that you want to discuss today, or we shall save something for next week. We have about 15 minutes of time allotted if you want to continue, or we can call it a quits for today. And maybe those folks who are in the chat can let us know if they want to continue on, or whether we want to save something for next week. Phyllis is telling us that other ways to obtain iodine is with the black walnut. It is somewhat in the nut meats, but it is concentrated in the green hulls. And Phyllis has provided over the years to me hand-selected, hand-picked, and processed walnut juice beverage, which I say it tastes like shoe leather. but you kind of get used to it, and a little tiny bit goes a long way. It kind of after you take it for a while, it becomes a refreshing drink. It's very potent stuff, and I don't know whether Phyllis takes it every day still, but it is a cleanser. So, folks, let us know if you want to keep going today, or if Kavi, you have any parting words or something that you want specifically to inform the listening audience.
Yeah, I would say that if you live in an area where your government has told you that the radiation is at that high level and you grow your own vegetables, then start watering them with the same iodine that you use for yourself, so that the radioactivity can be collected. Yeah. Of course, when you water them, make sure that you don't water the whole plant, but only the roots, so that you don't get all the stuff in the soil. Yeah, and let the iodine let it take up as much as it can from the radioactive material. And you know, that will also go in the soil, but because the iodine binds to it. Bacteria have actually a wonderful capacity. They can pick up things that nobody else can pick up. Yeah, bacteria are able to clean contaminated soil with oil. They are capable of removing heavy metals. They are capable of so many things. And I think if there is any solution, then rather than technology, I think biology has to come up with the answers.
Mm-hmm. Biology has to come up with the answers. Well, less genetic engineering and more getting back to nature. It's amazing. I didn't realize we have quite a few folks who are on the Homeopathy World Community live chat. So we've got two chat lines going on at the same time. We've got Andrea, Darlene, Dr. Avindra, Dr. Bob, Dr. Khan, Jana, and Vic are on both places. We have a question about, it's probably off topic, Darlene Nixon asks about the metals being sprayed in the atmosphere. We're not going to switch to chemtrails today. We're going to have to do that at another session. And aluminum oxide, one from cesium-137 rays and one from technetium, giving off gamma rays. These are different kinds. Are these coming out of radioactive nuclear plants?
Yeah, I would say so. The cesium especially comes off from the nuclear plants. Yeah, and for the moment, that is going to be the bigger problem. And I think that the plutonium itself, you know, you see the process of decay of a radioactive element. Also brings out helium, yeah, and helium is present in all radioactive materials, and I think that with helium we could also do something, but
okay.
I'm not sure. That is also something that we have to find out by trial and error.
Right, and we also have comments which we've used in the past. The homeopathic remedy X-ray has been used in the past, and would this be a pertinent remedy to add to our potential.
Well, I tried that with one of my clients in Japan, and he got a very, very big aggravation from it. And only because the next day we gave radium bromatum did it come down. But if that would not have been possible, he might have died. So he's a family member of someone who's worked at the plant, yeah, who's been doing the cleanup lately. And being around that person was enough to give him radiation burns.
Right. This is one of the things that people should be aware of, clothing and the...
He went to visit the person when he just came back, and then he walks in, yeah? And all he did was touch the man's jacket, yeah? And got the radiation burns. So I said, oh, okay, you can try X-ray. And that was a low potency. It was only a 12C. Yeah.
Okay.
He took the 12C and he got a severe aggravation. The burning spread over his whole arm, and so the next morning, you know, they were panicking a little. And said, okay, then instead of that, use radium bromatum. I will be very careful with X-ray, because if you read the provings of X-ray, some of the provers took a single dose and had symptoms for the rest of their life.
Okay.
Yeah,
so we have to be careful.
X-ray is a very, very powerful remedy, yeah, and I think it can do some good, but not in a case where there is already a severe case of radiation sickness. I would not
What about a higher potency? You're saying that you gave a low potency.
Yeah, I gave a low potency because what he is around is a gross material manifestation, really. And when you have that kind of thing, then what happens when the intensity of the disease is great, which is the case in this case, because you only touch the jacket. Yeah, then the vitality immediately goes down, because then the vitality is using up its energy to get rid of it. And if you have a low vitality and you give a high potency, I would never do that, because you can read in Clark under oxygen how they gave a 1M oxygen to a lady who had breast cancer, and a month later she was dead because the body could not keep up with the elimination process. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
So I would never use high potency in such cases.
Right. So homeopathic remedies must be given with care by professionals who know how to match the energy of the human, of the living organism, to the energy of the homeopathic remedies, even though some people say there's nothing in them. And even at the most highest potency level, they are succussed and diluted to an extreme, yet they have the qualities to heal, the potential to heal.
The potential to do harm.
Yes, if they're used inappropriately and without
knowledge. And also, you know, in approving, what do? We take the remedy repeatedly, and then we find out what symptoms they cause. So to call homeopathy a harmless medicine is actually disingenuous. It gives people a false sense of security. Yeah?
But
because
provings are
done with homeopathic remedies that make you sick. So how can they be harmless? That is not possible.
But when you stop giving or taking the remedy in approving, the symptoms most usually will disappear.
But that takes also time. Yeah, and in a case where you already have a disease from radiation, they won't disappear. They will only aggravate it. And if you aggravate in such a case, you can kill the person. You have a greater responsibility there to be very, very careful and match the potency to the vitality of the patient. Because if the vitality is low and you give a high potency, especially in such cases, then you run a great risk of straight away killing them.
Well, this really highlights the need for education, for teaching, for training, and for the knowledge about utilization of homeopathic remedies, especially in the future world that we have ahead of us in terms of radiation sickness and poisoning throughout the world. So we have a question in the chat here. that if you have plutonium or cesium in the water, can we make a remedy from it?
Yes, you can.
Okay.
Of course you can.
Potentizing the water that we drink, maybe?
That will be one way. I would still follow Hahnemann's idea, who says you, even if the remedy is a liquid, you first triturate with sugar or milk, because then you have a better effect of the remedy.
Oh.
Yeah, what Hahnemann says in the sixth edition. And I would, in a severe case of radiation poisoning, I would use LM potencies.
Mm-hmm. Right,
yeah,
definitely.
Because they are very subtle, and they generally do not cause any aggravation. So if you want to be on the safe side, use LM potencies and use them daily, and if necessary, three times daily in a severe case.
And
yeah.
I'm sure that most of the listeners do not have any idea what the LM potency is.
But that is described in the Organon in the 6th edition. Hahnemann describes between paragraph 269 to 275, he describes exactly how to make them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and
okay.
Anybody can follow that.
This is part of our education, and we're going to have to keep doing that. We've got Dr. Bob has said... how to remove radiation from water. He's giving us a link to a North Carolina University website. It's a release that says North Carolina State develops material to remove radioactive contaminants from drinking water. April 13th, which was released just today, cutting edge news, a combination of forest byproducts and crustacean shells may be the key to removing radioactive materials in drinking water, found by North Carolina State University. Quote, as we currently are seeing in Japan, one of the major health risks posed by nuclear accidents is radioactive iodide that dissolves into drinking water. Because it is chemically identical to non-radioactive iodine, the human body cannot distinguish it, which is what allows it to accumulate in the thyroid and eventually lead to cancer, says Joel Paula, associate producer of Forest Biomaterials. Quote, the material that we developed binds iodide in water and traps it, which can then be properly disposed of without risk to humans or the environment. The new material, or a combination of hemicellulose, a byproduct of forest materials, and chitosan, crustacean shells that have been crushed into a powder, not only absorbs water, but can actually extract contaminants such as the radioactive iodide from the water itself.
That is very good news.
Well, this is good about the iodine, but let's see what else it says. The material, which forms a solid foam, has applications beyond radioactive materials. Pawlak, spelled P-A-W-L-A-K, and fellow researchers found that it has the ability to remove heavy metals, such as arsenic, and we have a lot of places in the earth, in different countries with arsenic contamination, from water or salt.
Yes,
from
especially India.
It says he can remove salt from seawater to make clean drinking water. Quote, in disaster situations with limited to no power source, desalinating drinking water is difficult, if not impossible. This foam could be brought along in situations to clean the water without the need for electricity. This material could completely change the way we safeguard the world's drinking water supply. And we still have a question regarding the cesium and the radioactive materials. Maybe this is the kind of technology that we're going to be looking forward to in the future. Thank you, Dr. Bob.
And as I said before, we have to look to biology, and what do we find? It is the shells of crustaceans that do it.
Right.
So it is a biological thing, although, you know, it is a shell, but it that is made by a biological, by a living entity that is... Given us here a solution rather than technology.
Uh-huh. Okay, and then also Phyllis is chiming in, and she says that eventually the reverse osmosis water systems will remove radiation. Well, that is one other way of looking at it. So Maybe yeah. we are just being pushed forward evolution in the evolution of the planet to deal with all of this radiation. I mean, I remember a time that we were concerned very much about radon that was coming up from the Earth. And maybe we need to find these kinds of solutions now and not later. We are just being pushed forward to this technology. Phyllis also has said magnetic radiation is and can be just as bad as cobalt or cesium or radium.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
So magnetic radiation, we'll have to have a discussion about that. We have so much information here. Cesium uptake in Ukrainian children after the Chernobyl nuclear reactor's disaster. There was a study led by V.B. Nestorenko at the Belrad Institute of Radiation Safety was performed to see if orally administered apalpectin was effective in binding 137 cesium in the gut. And we're going to just keep going on with this news. We're going to explore what is on the cutting edge and let people know what scientific investigators and researchers are doing so that people can get in touch with them and maybe if there's a connection or something turns on a switch in your brain, you will be able to bring something to light. We are just about out of time. Kavi, do you want to close and say anything on the last minute of the show?
Yes. I would say, again, anybody who grows his own food, use the iodine on it for as long as the as the radiation keeps going. Yeah, put iodine in your water and water your plants with it, so at least that the iodine is bound, binds the radioactive material, and make sure that you clean your water with the things you just mentioned. Yeah. People can grind up seashells themselves, yeah, if they can find them. And
what about diatomaceous earth? Is that something?
Diatomaceous earth, yes,
yeah.
That's another one. I think that is another thing that you could bind radiation to, because diatomaceous earth is really also ground up seashells.
That's right.
Yeah. So
yeah.
There we have a similar thing, and. You know, one tablespoonful full of that diatomaceous earth a day, I would say would give you a reasonable protection. I cannot guarantee anything, of course, yeah, because we have not done any testing with it. But logic demands that we use our brains ourselves and that we look for solutions wherever we can find them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so if you could provide that link that Dr. Bob gave you, from the university, then people can inquire there about the production process and how to make it themselves and protect themselves. Yeah, because we cannot expect the university to do that for everybody, but it can give us the process.
Okay, we're closing the show. I want to thank everybody. This was an extra long show today, and we'll be back again, if not next week, the week after, because of a holiday. Okay.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to How Homeopathy Helps Grow Great Gardens with co-hosts Kaviraj Vaikuthanath and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Radio. Remember to get some sunshine and light up your life in your garden.